Today's show is a podcast about podcasting, and Sally and I are joined by some of the best and brightest podcasters within the Senate, so you're not going to want to miss their insights on how to do a podcast, how to get started, the technology behind it, and how to keep it going. All that and more coming up next on the show. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 272 for Tuesday, January 22nd, 2013. And it's cold outside. Actually, not as cold as one of our guest hosts. We'll get to that in a minute. But Sally, this is a first for us. Five people on the same podcast.
Very exciting day for us. We're podcasting about podcasting, and we thought we'd invite some experts along for the discussion.
Some people in the trenches.
There you go. Trenches.
I'm excited about this because the people that we have on here come from all walks of life and do podcasting for different reasons. We have different focus, and I think there is a lot to be learned. And that's one question we get a lot, Sally, is how do you do podcasting? So we hope to learn that from the 300 guests that we have. So let's just go left to right, as far as Google Hangouts has it. On our left, door number one, that is Bob Martins from, you live in New Ulm, right, Bob?
Yeah, we do live in New Ulm.
Not in the suburbs of New Ulm.
No, like Sleepy Eye. That's where my friend lives, actually.
So. Okay. And Bob, what do you do there in New Ulm?
Well, I work in network services at Martin Luther College, primarily a web developer, but as is the case in most Wells institutions, once you're in IT, you kind of do a little bit of everything at some point. So
absolutely, yep.
I keep busy doing that, and then we do podcasting on the side mostly. So.
Yep, and what kind of podcast do you have?
I have a podcast with door number three here, Phil Wells. Mm-hmm. We do one called, it's just this one podcast, and it's kind of a variety show of sorts. We talk a little bit about everything, but, with our friend Jonas, who is also from high school, and we revolve around technology a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I do a little one just of my personal stuff or personal thoughts on the side too. So
okay, awesome. Speaking of Philip, door number three, Philip, welcome, Philip Wells. Hi. And I believe we've had you on the we've had you on the show before, right?
I was on once before,
and I know we've had Bob on before as well. Mm-hmm. So, Philip, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm currently living in New Ulm too, but I'm working over in Mankato at Bethany Lutheran College. And I work in the video production department, so I'm there in the afternoons and evenings when most of the faculty goes home to help students get the equipment they need, do troubleshooting, and help out kind of wherever is needed.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for joining us. And as Bob mentioned, you are the dynamic, one of, not actually a dynamic duo, but a terrific trio, on that podcast. So. Yeah. Going from left to right, and finally we'll skip Sally since everybody knows her, but on this side is Pastor Tom Barthel from Baxter, Minnesota. Welcome, Tom.
Hey.
How are you?
Very good. Things are going well.
You win the prize for the deepest deep freeze. You said
yes,
20
you would.
Below up in Baxter.
It was when I woke up, yeah.
But nice and toasty, hopefully, where you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast.
Well, I was fortunate to get a call to a church where they had a lot of investment in a video setup. They have a local cable channel broadcast. So I started doing a podcasting of my sermons since we have a recording to those. Okay. And I recently started a podcast also with door number three, who apparently is gone right now. But, Phil and I are working on a podcast that is a collection of resources from pastors. I figured pastors send out so many devotional emails that they're already doing. Why not have them record some of those and put them together in a single resource? And I've also added some music and some church history segments as well.
Okay. And we will have the links to all these podcasts and a little bit of description and, some background information on the show notes page as well. But thank you for joining us and taking the time. Maybe we should start at the beginning. I think most people kind of understand what a podcast is, but there are different flavors, you know, of podcasts. So right now we're basically doing two podcasts in one. We do an audio and video, but maybe let's just take that big step back and say, you know, what is a podcast?
No detail today.
I'll jump in on that one, Martin. I would call a podcast basically a delivery of audio and video content via the web. And you typically do that maybe in connection with a blog or a website, and you have a specific RSS feed that allows it to pick up those audio and video components that are produced and associated with the podcast. The terminology, the RSS terminology that you use is something called enclosures. And with those enclosures in place, then things like iTunes or other RSS readers can pick up on the fact that there's audio and video content available and download it easily to your computer or to a specific player where you can watch or listen to that content. Am I okay with that description, guys?
Sounds good to me. Phil, just nod your head.
Yeah, that's good.
one of our biggest questions I get when we talk about podcasts is, well, how do you do it? You know, what, you know, other than just the software, which you mentioned, Sally, a little bit. We just lost. We lost Tom.
Our pastor.
Let me add him back. So let's talk a little bit about the setups necessary, just the raw equipment, other than the whole RSS side. What else do you need?
Depends on what you're going to do. I know Phil can speak for when we record this one podcast. Most of us just have like a USB headset, mm-hmm. or Phil has his wireless one on right now. You can use just a stereo headset as well. But basically that, and then the ability to record the audio, if you're just doing an audio podcast, are the basics of it. But when Phil's at Bethany, the stakes are much higher and the equipment much more expensive for right. Because you can go all out as far as equipment goes. And I know I listen to a lot of podcasts by the 5x5 network.
Right.
And Phil does too, and I'm sure other people do. And he's gone into the equipment that he uses sometimes, or he'll show pictures of all the rat's nest behind his equipment. And, you can start as small as you want with a $10 USB desktop microphone and go up from there to multi-$1,000 digital mixers and recording equipment. But the nice thing is your voice does sound really nice then when you get right. into the really expensive stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
It really does depend on purpose what level of quality, sure.
And also just what's available to you. I mean, I honestly, this is a Rock Band USB saying you plug it into your Xbox and you can play Rock Band or whatever. Mm-hmm. Other with it, it sound you plug it into your computer and it recognizes it right away, and the sound is actually pretty good. So mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to do some sort of podcasting, you just need a mic and start small, and then if you work your way into it and grow into it, don't go out and you don't have to have $100 microphone before you can start podcasting.
Right. And on the recording side, the software side for audio recording, what do you guys use or recommend?
When we started up this one podcast, Bob and I both went to the Mac App Store and bought Piezo, which is from Rogue Amoeba. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, was it $10 or something like that?
Might have been five, and, it's not expensive. Five,
yeah. But that's Mac only. I know Jonas uses Audacity. Mm-hmm. And I've used Audacity. We've played with QuickTime because you can just record straight to QuickTime. That works pretty well. And then, when I'm at Bethany, I use Pro Tools because we got the audio mixer to send everything in through. So,
yeah. And on the software side of things too, the way this one podcast is an audio only podcast. And the way we do it is we all get onto a single Skype call, and one of us, depending on who's where, will record the Skype call, but we'll all record our individual audio streams from our mics.
Right.
And then we'll use Dropbox to send all of those big audio files to a single person, usually Phil. And he'll do the editing, line everything up, cut everything down, usually put some funny quip at the very start, which is usually me saying something stupid. And then he'll do the leveling, and then he'll export that file, and then we'll run that through a free program called Levelator, which makes it so that we sound a whole lot better than we actually do. And then we'll output that as a MP3, and then we'll send that away. But that's an audio-only one, which makes it – we go through a lot of steps to get individual audio from each one of the mics from the source, actually.
Right. So you don't you don't record the mix. You record individual tracks, and you do the mashup, right? All right. So we just got kind of talking through the hardware side. What you use is probably – You certainly want a level of quality, and with spoken word, that's fairly easy to grab. You know, when you get into music and that kind of stuff, then it gets a little bit more important to amp up things a little bit. If you're doing video podcasts, then clearly you have some other dynamics. You've got lighting, like we're working with now. You have making sure that the camera angles are pleasant, so to speak, complimentary, and then also just the sets that you're working with. So it's the camera angle needs to be, you prefer it maybe a little bit higher, and your background needs to have something that's not going to be distracting. And then there are different ways to do the video recording as well. So it's we're using Google Hangouts, which seems to work most times, but there are other options as well.
Probably a good time, Martin, to plug in that we have a Wells Tech Wiki, and several years ago we had actually gone through the process of documenting our podcast setup and all the equipment, software and hardware that we use. We're going to be doing a version 2 of that. Hopefully today we're going to produce a brand new page that has links to all the different software and hardware that we're discussing on the show. So if you want to head over to the Wells Tech Wiki, there'll be a link in the show notes so you can learn more about, get links to all the different things we're talking about.
I guess one thing that came to mind as you were talking and mentioning the show notes, that I believe that's kind of an important part of our podcast, because it is kind of resource driven. It's good to especially for audio listeners, to be able to go to a website and grab those resources so that they're not struggling or scrambling to write this stuff down. What do you guys feel about that side of it? Just kind of what you leave behind. What's the other dimension of that?
I think that's huge. There are certain shows I listen to, and I depend on the show notes to go back and find links or to find resources or stuff like that. And there's other ones like this one podcast where we don't put anything out there, and I feel kind of bad if we mention something and there's no link to it, because then you have to. It's really hard to search the audio. Like sometimes for me, I listen to multiple podcasts in a row, and I can't remember which show they were on, let alone what they said.
Right.
So show notes are huge.
Yeah, then there's no good way to scrub or search through audio easily. So show notes are important. We early on, Sally, I think one of the requests we had right out of the box was that we put the time codes for different segments of the show right in the show notes. So if you're interested in just the interview or the picks or the feedback or whatever, you could go right to that. I think somebody was interested in just the music. So they wanted to know when the music started. So
forget all that tech talk.
That's right.
The real stuff. You also have to have a place to store these files. And I think, Bob, you mentioned that the files can get kind of large.
Well, they can, especially the video ones.
Yeah.
Audio, you can get down pretty small.
Yeah, but you can use a variety of ways. If you host your own site, you might post your content right there on your own domain, or you can use a lot of the cloud-based storage solutions as well. I know SoundCloud, Martin, you mentioned, was very popular for storing audio podcasts.
Yeah. You can store it almost anywhere, I suppose, right, guys?
Yes. Yep. We use our church server. It's got unlimited streaming storage.
Okay. Cool.
Awesome.
I know we use Amazon's S3.
Yep.
And it's super cheap, even though we're on just finished episode 50 for this one podcast. I mean, I pay less than $2 a month for all of the storage and bandwidth of all the files. And that includes, my entire account, which has more than just that in it. So yeah. It's also economical too if you don't want, if you don't have a hosting provider who provides unlimited. So there are other ways to do it too.
Yeah, and audio is pretty skinny, so you're not taking up a lot of server space. It gets a little more challenging with video, and then obviously you have different avenues to post your video to YouTube, Vimeo, whatever. So, so that's maybe enough about the technology. Maybe the most important part of podcasting is the content. Maybe you guys could talk a little bit about how you decide what goes on the show.
For the one that I recently started, the Kanan-bound podcast, I figured I'm gathering resources from multiple users, and I know that you can have a very structured podcast, and you can try and think of what am I going to put on this ahead of time, but I can't really do that if I'm asking people to, on a voluntary basis, send me their email devotions. So what I've done for content is focus on content. I think that's a good thought. You want the content to your podcast to be what you spend the most time on, but really it's just compiling whatever comes my way is what I've been working on. Mm-hmm. And if you're working from a church office or working on a podcasting from a school, sometimes your content will be, and I'm going to get a catechism lesson or something. But what I found is I'm trying to make a feeling of united content, but I really can't. Sometimes it is just, here's our episode. Right. This is what we have, and try to give a main theme behind it. But the theme is basically being encouraged from God's word.
Right.
And often I think if you're going to have a church website, content is going to vary so much based on the church season, based on.
Yep. Yep. And I think for your audience, you know, they're going to gravitate toward, you know, what interests them. And if it's variety, then that's fine. If it's just a sermon podcast or, you know, you're doing Bible study, whatever, you know, then that's fine too. Philip and Bob, how about you guys? How do you figure out what goes on the show?
Well, I don't know. Phil, if you want to talk about the other podcast you do, the Creative Circle podcast, because that's a unique one compared to our Variety Hour.
Yeah. I don't know if we do much for planning for top usually, but... I started a podcast with one of the students at Bethany, and they're called the Creative Circle Podcast. And the basic premise behind that was he's big into design and 3D graphic design and stuff like that, and motion animation. And so he wanted to meet people in the industry. He had worked out in California last summer, so we started something where we can like contact people and talk to them about kind of how they got to where they are. And so the main thing we're doing is finding people we think would be interesting to interview and talking to them. We talked to Ash Thorpe this last week about just how he got into the industry. He's done work on like Total Recall and Prometheus and X-Men First Class, and he's kind of self-taught. So, you know, we kind of find somebody that we want to interview, and then Aaron does a really good job of researching them, and you know, it's the hard part's coming up with unique and interesting questions. Actually, later today we have a interview with Kurt Henkel, the guy who did the music for VeggieTales.
Oh, cool!
So, you know, we're trying to figure out who, like, what we want to ask them and find out about is, and can just kind of research them. We usually read up on like other interviews they've done too, so we kind of get a feel for who we're talking to.
Sure.
Sounds a lot like our process, Martin. And you always end up learning a lot in the process, which is a good thing. I really appreciate the variety of people that we've had a chance to talk to and, you know, kind of exploring the content around those interviews and learning along with the listeners.
Sure. And once you get an audience, it's easy enough to ask them, hey, what, or get a sense from their feedback, what things are, you know, top of mind, and you can figure out a kind of a schedule that way. We should probably say, and it's probably different for everybody, you know, on the panel here, how much time they spend in the podcasting process. Maybe let's just go quickly around the table for each of your podcasts. What kind of time commitment is necessary to make this thing work?
I guess I'll start. It really depends on the week. You know, this one podcast, originally Phil and I started it off and it was going to be kind of an every other week sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we were kind of like, we're never going to do it every other week. So we should really do it every week because it's easier to keep a schedule. And that's one thing we found is if you keep a schedule, you're more likely to do it than if you're going to kind of go, oh, we'll do it whenever we have a topic.
Yep. So that's how podcasts die, right?
That is how podcasts die. Very true.
And a lot of them do die. Yeah.
Yes, they do. So, but then it really depends on what we have for a topic. Recently, Phil and I did a podcast on task management, which was kind of a riff off of a lot of Back to Work episodes on the 5x5 network with Merlin Mann.
Right.
And for that, I actually read through Getting Things Done.
Yeah.
There it is. There it is. Look at that. Yes.
Always at my left hand here.
So in that case, you put a lot of effort into it. And in other weeks when we have one of our just kind of oddball shows where one of us comes up with questions, the other person asks them and we see what happens, that one you really don't do a lot of – I don't put a lot of effort into, but Phil puts a lot of time into it to come up with really good questions for us.
Right.
So it varies from time to time. Mm-hmm. Luckily, Phil does all the hard work. He does all the audio compilation stuff that I used to do in GarageBand.
The
post-production is really going to be, I think, most of your time commitment is what you're thinking of. For the time commitment, I have two different podcasts. One is a sermon production where I put out the sermons each week. And you could really do that pretty quick, I think, if you just put the sermon out there. But I also put a clip on the beginning, both on the video, a little introduction clip where someone speaks, and then a little thing at the end. But really, with the editing for the sermons, I probably think I can do it in 5 to 20 minutes. Really, it's the generation, the post-production, rendering the file that really takes you the most time.
Yeah.
And one thing I found is I look around at people for church to do the introduction voice, so it's always someone at the church adding a voice onto the podcast.
Awesome.
And that takes maybe 5 more minutes a week to do that, but it adds something, I think.
Mm-hmm.
With the Canaanbound podcast, that one, I have 5 different people working with me on that podcast. So as far as production-wise, it doesn't take me much time at all to produce the podcast as far as getting the resources. They just send me all the resources, and I have to compile it, and Phil compiles it. And we just kind of add the introduction segments, introduce files, put music. So we could do that probably in 5 minutes if we wanted to, but to put out a production where you're making everything flow smoothly, it is a time commitment, and I think probably it takes about 60 minutes for me at this point to put together one 20-minute podcast of that sort.
Right.
I don't know how long it takes Phil or Philip.
I don't know if Jason Jasperson originated the quote or if he was quoting someone else, but he has a saying for his art students, and that's good art is never finished. You just have to find a good stopping point. And I think that really goes with this as well, because I can just throw stuff, you can throw stuff in together and, it works, but you can spend a lot of time on stuff. I know when I record at school and I can record everything into Pro Tools at the same time, the audio is already synced up. It's good to go. You just make a couple cuts, throw in the music and you export. Pro Tools exports in real time, which takes, you can go do other stuff. Whereas with Top, you actually have to find all of the line up all the tracks so they're synced up, and then make sure you listen well. With the Canaanbound podcast, I basically throw everything into GarageBand and then just kind of record the segments that need recorded and move them back and forth and line them up.
Sure.
I think a lot of the time then comes with the exporting and converting. I could just export from GarageBand and, you're good to go. But since I want to run it through the Levelator, I have to export and do an uncompressed format to begin with. And then I got to convert that. And then I've been started adding the metadata with a separate program so I can get the album art before I upload it. And then you got to, I've added several levels of complication to the process that aren't completely necessary, but I feel it gives a better result at the end.
Most things in technology, you can get yourself into a rat hole pretty quick. It's a never-ending abyss that you can get yourself into to tweak that last thing or turn that last knob or get that last letter in exactly the right spot. But he does. Phil does awesome work. I've been more than happy. That's not just trying to stroke his ego a little bit because he does all the work from Top, but it's pretty remarkable. The first ones sound like crud, and then when Phil took over, everything seems to work so much smoother.
You do see that time commitment does go down after you've done a little bit.
Yeah.
It does. And you could absolutely spend a lot of time. You could get rid of every and every pause and every, you know, whatever. And you know, I did that at the beginning. I said, you know, that's not worth it.
Happen.
It's not worth it. You know?
Martin, I don't know what you'd say about our time commitment, but I personally probably spend 4 hours a week on the Wells Tech podcast. We do an hour, obviously, of recording each week.
Yep.
We do 30 minutes to an hour of planning for that recording. So we have a regular meeting where we plan and mind map what we're going to talk about. And then the production stuff, for me, my side of it is typing up those extensive show notes, which can take me an hour or so because of all the linkage and photos and all the kind of stuff that you have to deal with on that side.
But think of all the time you're saving other people.
There you go. And actually, it comes back to me because I referenced that archive. That's pretty much my brain on the web. So we're able to search and reference the archive quite a bit. So, yeah. And I don't know what your post-production stuff, maybe an hour for you too, or?
No, it's probably a couple hours that it takes me. It depends. And then it depends if we have an interview too. You know, so sure. There's production work there because we do audio and video now with that. So, it varies. And then I guess the podcast is kind of in the back of my mind throughout the week as I'm looking at resources, looking at Twitter, you know, Facebook, whatever, just talking to people, suggesting resources, whatever. So it's kind of part and parcel. And I suppose depends on what the podcast is. It's one last question and we should jump into our next segment. When you're thinking about a podcast, when you guys were all thinking about starting a podcast, what was the thought process? Was it, this would be cool, or there's a need that needs to be met, or what was kind of behind that first podcast that got you going?
Phil?
I don't remember why we started Top.
I think it was just because
to talk to you every week.
Yeah, to carve out some time every week to just kind of talk a little bit. I mean,
you're doing it anyway. Why not share?
Yeah. Or we weren't doing it, and so we might as well start doing it. So
okay,
and because we listen to podcasts so often, it just kind of seemed like a cool thing at first to try out, mm-hmm. and it just kind of became. We brought another friend from high school on board as a third host, and you know, it just kind of became a really nice thing for the three of us to do every week to try and get together and talk that it's been 50 episodes and we're hopefully going to get to 100 and get a cake. That's the plan. So that's our motivation right now is a cake at the end of 100 episodes.
Okay. Well, whatever motivates you, right? Tom, how about you?
Well, for the sermon podcast, we already had people up in our audio video booth capturing things for the cable company, and we had these nice recordings with four different cameras and everything was all well captured. So I thought, why not take this and make sure it's something that is also available online? And I realized too, how if someone is looking for a church home, what's one of the first things they're going to do? They're going to check out the website. And then I think to have the sermon, both in audio and video format, is something that would probably help people. Even if, you know, I wasn't trying to get more numbers, you know, maybe we'll have anywhere from 1 to 60 people watch one of the clips. But the idea is if just one person sees that and decides this is a teaching that they want to grow in and understand, that makes it worthwhile, the extra time.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And just one final thought is I think it always helps to do it with somebody. I can't imagine doing this by myself. I guess I wouldn't do it by myself. So even if that person is just doing production or just doing planning or whatever, it helps to have some kind of soundboard and somebody to talk through things or whatever. So,
yeah.
It's definitely a creative mm-hmm. process where you mm-hmm. have to, yeah. you know, come up with ideas and keep it fresh and that kind of thing. So. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, let's move on to the next segment, which is ministry resources. Sally, we came across a cool tool this past week.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I actually have it up on my screen. That would make sense, but maybe not. but yeah,
the pressure is really on since we're talking about podcasting.
This great. Needs to be see Sally fail, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. This is actually recommended by a listener and someone who is out in Colorado, I believe. Karen Thomas is her name, and she sent us to Prayer List. It's got a unique spelling. It's PrayrList.com. So leave out that second vowel, the E there. And this is actually a companion product to your Facebook account. And so basically you sign in here with Facebook and it looks at your friend list and divides it up so that you can pray for everyone on your friend list. Look, I'm supposed to pray for Philip Wells today, as well as other people. And so you can tell it, I want to pray for my entire friend list in 1 week or 1 month or 6 months or a year, and it will take your friend list and divide it up so that you get a certain number of people to pray for each day. And then as you pray for them, you just click the magic button, I've prayed for them. If you want, you can write on their wall or you can skip that step, but it tallies for you how many friends you've prayed for this week, this month, this year. So it is kind of an accountability kind of thing. I think their original name was Prayer Book, but the Facebook people called them off of that and wouldn't let them use Prayer Book. But instead they went with Prayer List. And it seems like a really good way to be more focused with your prayer life and intentional and praying for the people. Look, I'm praying for Bob too. Man, you guys really hit my prayer list today. So yeah, if you want to put it on their wall, you can write on their wall that you prayed for them today and that kind of thing.
Certainly,
it was a pretty cool tool.
Good thing to encourage people. Let them know you're praying about them. You see the example of the Apostle Paul, you know, I keep you in my prayers.
Absolutely. Right. And I think if they use Prayer List, you can send out messages to your friends who are also using it. Pray for this specific event in your life or whatever. And I haven't explored it real deeply, but it seemed like it was well worth a ministry resource mention.
So does the reminder to pray come through Facebook, or you have to go to their site?
You know, I just signed up yesterday, just came across my desk, and you can have it emailed to you.
Okay.
Although I don't remember receiving that email today. I didn't look for that specifically. But in the sign-up process, you can request that it be emailed to you. I don't think it showed up on my Facebook page, but maybe we'll have a follow-up discussion of this next week or something as I have more experience with it.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that's one thing that I talk about in my productivity stuff is to create a to-do list that just is a prayer list and have some kind of way to automate that process to remind you, hey, you know, this person, you put this person on the list, but this is a little bit more holistic and I think suggests or tries to encourage a very regular, prayer life. Mm-hmm. So I like that. Cool.
Very intentional.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to one of our favorite segments, our picks of the week. And we've got five picks today, but we're going to still let ladies go first.
Oh, great. Like I have that webpage up now, Martin. I have a great pick to share with you, and I'm just looking for it here. It's from my friend Jane Hart, and I've talked about Jane on the show before. Jane is kind of in the online learning space from a corporate point of view. So corporate company learning opportunities, that kind of thing. And she's been around for several years. And one of the things that she does each year is she invites trainers and educators from around the world to compile a list of the top tools that they use. And she puts it all together and displays it on her website. And now recently she has launched an initiative for the year 2013 to invite people to blog about and take the 10 tools challenge. So I'm going to be brave and state here for the archives of Wells Tech that I'm going to blog this year about the 10 tools challenge. And what she's suggesting is that you visit her top 100 tools list. Again, she compiles it every year. There's a lot
of
history here.
We've looked at that in the past,
yeah. And we have. And pick things that you aren't familiar with. And blog about them, one per month for the months February through November for 10 months in 2013. And then in December, kind of wrap up with what you've learned. So out of these 100 tools, I've gone through and selected some. Right off the bat, I really want to start with installing BuddyPress, which is a WordPress plugin that allows you to have a WordPress site that's kind of similar to a Facebook, a community site. So that's one I've been interested in for quite a while, and that's going to be my challenge for February. So to be part of Jane's Top 10 Tools Challenge, you just need to add to the comments on this blog post where she explains it. And then she'll add you to the list of people that are participating in it. And then you can continue to post your blog post all through the year. And she's going to be recapping some of those and doing that kind of thing. It seemed like a fun thing to be a part of and a good way to learn. I've got Yammer on my list and Scoop It and Poll Everywhere and Symbaloo. So some of these tools that I've heard float around, but I never have actually taken the time to learn about. I'm going to be real intentional this year and spend some time with them. So that's my pick of the week.
Cool. And we'll track your progress.
Yeah. Keep me accountable.
All right. How should we do this? Let's maybe go in reverse order to our intro and start with our friend enduring the 20 below temperatures this morning, Tom.
Do you want me to share a screen here? Or
you can if you like.
Okay. Let's see how this works. I've never done a Google Hangout like this before, so can you see my screen?
No.
You got to pick one.
Got to pick one.
You should be presented with a number of screens that you have in front of you.
There's an icon in the left column under the chat icon that's for screen share.
Oh, I see. There we go. So share selected window. That's pretty neat.
There it is.
Awesome.
All right. Yeah, this is a guy who just puts out his art. He says you can even use it for commercial use. And they're not high-resolution files, but these are different images from the New Testament and from the Old Testament. He's in the United Kingdom here. But these are some images that you can just toss on a bulletin cover or use for any purpose.
Cool.
Awesome. And the website is?
It's christian-art.uk.org.uk. You'll have to put it as one of those 100 things you put on the show notes, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
I have a list of 100 more, so you can put them all down for me.
All right.
Very nice.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. We're always excited to get new art resources.
Yeah, and that's a request we get a lot, too. Mm-hmm. Phil, what do you got?
Oh, I think I'm going to plug the headset I use today. I have the, I don't know if it shows up there. I have the, it's just a headset from Skype, and I had the FreeTalk Everyman. It's a USB headset, which tends to be a little bit better for sound quality, I find. And, but after that, the one I had broke, and so I splurged and got the $70 or whatever wireless headset, and it's not USB or it's not Bluetooth. It's wireless. It's just a USB wireless. And I tell you, once you go wireless and you realize you can stand up and go to the kitchen and grab a cup of coffee and then come back without having to take your headset off, it's very, very nice.
Yeah, sound quality is not bad. So is that the microphone out of the left ear there?
Yeah, it the little boom mic thing is a little bit short compared to the other one, and I feel it picks up the headset, the earphones a little bit when I notice when I record. But overall, like, sound quality and listening is perfect.
Yeah, looks comfortable. What's the range on that?
30 or so feet.
Oh, wow.
If I go around too many walls, it...
So you don't even need line of sight. So it's a little dongle that you plug in your USB?
Yep.
Is it rechargeable then?
It's rechargeable. The dongle you plug into the USB actually has a mini USB out, which plugs into here. So when I get done, I actually have a hook on my desk where I hang it and then plug it in to recharge.
Cool. So. Cool. Very stylish, too.
It's important.
Bob, how about you?
Well, do you mind if I do two? They're somewhat related.
You're a guest, so okay. We'll give that latitude. Yeah.
The worst that could happen is you kick me off, and then
that's
I'm not
right.
Back next week. So. One's a hardware, and one's a software one. So
Okay. First
I'll do the platform agnostic one, which will be, let's see if I can do the screen share thing. Let's see. I'm going to share do a meta share here and then go to, do you see the Blue Microphones homepage?
You do?
Yep.
Awesome. So I use at home when I'm recording my podcast, I use a Blue Snowball, which is one of their older desktop microphones. But right now the Yeti is kind of the replacement for it. So this is the Snowball on the bottom here. That's what I use for recording. It's very nice. They're all USB microphones, so you don't have to worry about plugging into the right audio port on your computer. And the Yeti is kind of a step up from that. But they're really nice, high quality.
Oh, Sally's got the real thing right there.
She's got the Yeti. Is that what she mm-hmm. is?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very nice microphones, high quality sound. I've been very happy with my Snowball. It was cheap, so that's why I got it. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is it's a high quality, good sound microphone. But it's USB, so you don't have to worry about extra cables or preamps or anything like that. Phil is far more knowledgeable in that sort of stuff and deals with that every day, so I leave him to Bethany's stuff for that.
Sounds like, just getting back on our podcast topic again, I guess I usually recommend a USB type system because you're straight to digital that way versus you know, trying to plug in analog and deal with you know, all the interference that may come through. Is that good advice, Phil?
Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's just easier. And a lot of times if people, even here on campus, if they're doing video conferencing and they're having problems with the microphone on their laptop, I recommend just getting a USB headset because you just take so many things out of the equation, which is kind of nice.
Right.
And then my software one real quick is a podcast client for iOS, and they're working on one for the Mac. And it's called Instacast, and this is what I use for my podcast, for listening to my podcasts that I like to listen to, and it works really well, and I've been really happy with it. It's for iOS only, so that's why I did that one last. But it's just nice. I don't use iTunes that way, and it syncs the between my iPad and my iPhone, the statuses of the podcast and stuff. So that'd be the other one.
I tried that a number of years ago. It was awesome then, and it's probably only better now. So cool. And that is kind of an ongoing search sometimes is to find a good podcasting client. Now I use Stitcher. So if it's on Stitcher, that's what my preference is, and that seems to work pretty well as well. So last and probably least is my pick, and it's a hardware pick and has nothing to do with podcasting, unfortunately, but it's okay. It is a Doxy scanner. For a long time, I used the Fujitsu ScanSnap, which was a desktop unit, which would feed multiple pages and really was a heavy-duty machine. But when I switched to Mac and using Parallels to run Windows, it had all kinds of problems connecting with that. The drivers wouldn't work or whatever. So I put that back in our pool here at the SAB and got a little bit more portable. And you can see that it's, those of you that are watching, it's, you know, something you can hold in your hand and put in your backpack or your briefcase or whatever. It is a single page at a time, so there are some limitations for this scanner. It is, it can be wireless. It will do, it can scan to three different, memory spaces. One, it's got internal memory or internal storage, and then you just hook it up via micro USB to your computer, and then it'll, through the software, it'll pull in all the scans that you have. You can put in an SD card as well, so it'll scan to the SD card and just pull the SD card out and put that in your computer and pull them off of there. Or if you, like I have an iFi card, you can, and you're on the same network, you can wirelessly send the scans from the scanner to the computer via your Wi-Fi network. And scans are really crystal clear. It'll go 300 or 600 DPI. It has OCR. It has some minor editing capabilities. You know, you're not going to get too sophisticated with it. Really, the point is that you have it with you, and it just works. So you can throw in a receipt. You can throw in single pages. It takes about 8 seconds per 8.5 by 11 page. So it's not you know, it's not super fast, so you're not going to want to digitize your, you know, an entire file cabinet worth of files. But for just the handiness of it, it does charge, and I think you can probably get up to, you know, 200 scans, you know, on a charge. So it's pretty good that way. $149, I think. There's different versions. If you're an educator or a student, there's a special version that's a little bit cheaper. But they all kind of work with the same premise. So single-sided, it'll do color or black and white. But just kind of the handy nature of it makes you really the purpose of technology is to use it. So if you're buying something that ultimately does not get used, then what's the point? But this is handy enough that it sits, you know, takes up a small section of the desk, you throw in a scan, you know, you're done. you throw the PDF on Google Drive or wherever it is you're going to store your stuff. It has its own cloud storage, too, if you wanted to do that. So that's Doxy. Get Doxy. What is it? I have it here. GetDoxy.com is the website if you want to learn a little bit more about it.
You're my paperless superhero, Mark.
I'm working at it.
You're doing good. Save those trees.
Okay. Let's go to our feedback section.
And we have a few links that were shared via Digo, a couple from our friend Tom Rosenau out in Pigeon, Michigan. And starting with an article on EdTech, the EdTech magazine for K-12. This is an interesting article. It says, can Google help students master the art of online search? And it kind of references a Pew survey, interestingly enough, says that 60% of teachers believe digital technologies make it hard for students to distinguish between credible and non-credible sources online. So this is all about helping students discern and know how to do good search, basically. Mm-hmm. And Google has set up a search education page to that end, where they have lesson plans and activities. And this is for all different age levels. They have it set up so that you can start with very young children, teaching them about good searching online. Power searching tools, a Google a day challenge. We've talked about that before, where you're given kind of a historical or scientific question, and you're supposed to use Google to find the answer to it. And then live training sessions as well. I watched this little introductory video on the site, and one quote from it said, the new digital divide are those who know how to search effectively and those who don't. So I thought that was kind of interesting. We really do need to be equipping our students with these search skills, and Google's doing their best to help us do that. Next, Tom tagged an article called Build Your Own Adobe Creative Suite with Free and Cheap Software. So basically walking through all the things that are part of the Adobe Creative Suite and parallel open source free software that's available. For instance, GIMP that's parallel to Photoshop, and Scribus that's parallel to InDesign. And the list goes on. It's quite extensive. He mentions Inkscape and Blender and PDF Exchange Viewer and a lot of others. So if you're looking to go free or very cheap without spending the money on the Adobe Creative Suite, this article is for you.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then there were a couple that I tagged on our Digo group. An e-newsletter for those interested in education technology. It's called Smart Brief. It's free and it delivers to your email box each day. And it just basically is a compilation of web articles and things like that all over the board that have to do with educational technology. So maybe worth the price tag, which is free for those of you that are interested.
Throw it in your RSS reader. Stay up to date.
That's right. I came across a website called Custom Ink, and there are many of these kind of options out there. This one I was real impressed with because you can design your own T-shirts and other products, and they have a lot of graphics and things available to you. You just go into their design lab, and you can get really creative. You can pick T-shirt colors. You can add text. You can add their artwork. We are the Warriors here, so I did a quick search for Warriors, and they had, you know, different things that I could add right away to the T-shirts if I wanted to do that kind of design work. Their pricing is based on the quantity that you purchase, and so the more you buy, the lower the cost. I saw, you know, for maybe 40 T-shirts, the price went below $10 for sure for each T-shirt. So really great way
to
get
schools might be interested in. Yeah,
right.
My real quick. My wife coaches the dance team at MVL, and she's ordered a number of T-shirts from Custom Ink. Has been very happy with them.
Oh, cool.
They've been quick both to ship and then also to fix some issues they've had with billing and stuff like that. So she's been very happy with them in the past.
Awesome, great.
Sounds like it's very customizable.
Yeah. And then the last link that I shared was an article I came across about image usability on your website. And I think this is a great read. It's not particularly short, but it goes through different mistakes you can make. And they used a lot of readability tracking, where they actually tracked eye movement on a website. And if you're seeing my screen, you can see that on this particular website, the image apparently has nothing to do with the article, and nobody looked at it. So,
well, they think it's an ad, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. But they also one I really liked was where they tracked it, wow. And it had a baby's picture, and everybody looked at the cute baby, but not many people looked at the words. But then they changed it that the baby was actually looking at the words, and that made the words a lot more readable.
That's a lot of science behind the art of web design. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. They go into a lot about image compression, and there's just a lot of really great imagery tips in this article. And like I said, not super short, but they have good examples that go along with everything that they're proposing there as being important things to pay attention to. So if you're doing any web design, I definitely recommend you check out this article.
Awesome.
That will do it for community feedback, Martin.
And if you would like to contribute to the feedback section of the show, it is so easy to do. Just go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, and leave a comment there, or just across the top of the screen, upper right, all kinds of icons, including Pinterest, where you can share your stuff with us, and we'll get it on the show.
Including Pinterest.
Including Pinterest. Who'd have thunk? Next week, Sally, we're not alone again. We're inviting one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents into the show again, Jason Schmidt. We have an interview with Emily Dittmar talking about EdCamp. EdCamp is kind of a new concept. It's an unconference where people get together and figure out what they're going to talk about once they get there. All things education and technology. So great interview with Emily. Very enthusiastic interview. So you're not going to want to miss
that. Definitely.
Guys, Bob and Phil and Tom, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate you joining not a competing podcast, but something other than your own. So really, thank you for your time and sharing
the invitation.
Sharing all your wisdom and blessings on your work in whatever capacity that is.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Let's close the show with the music of Stephen Bautista, Who Will Tell Them. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
There's an old man dying in his bed, just barely hanging on. But where he's nearing his last breath, he's so scared and all. Her body on the street so that she can pay the rent. Who will recognize her pain without judgmental?